What's happening, guys? Welcome back. Welcome to season two. It's Preacher. We're back on AfterBuzz TV. We are so friggin' pumped to talk about the episode On the Road, season two, episode one. We got a brand new panel. Hang out with us, guys. We'll see you in just one second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
It's great, guys. We're back.
I like this song.
Me too.
I think it's a good song. I'm glad they warmed up to it as the car chase went on.
I love this song. Though I have told people, I'm 29 years old. I've told people at least 10 years older than me how much I like the song, and they're like, "You just weren't alive then."
Oh, like, because
I never want to hear that song again.
Right, right.
Yeah, I can imagine that being the overplayed.
Yeah, yeah. This song for a different generation. If this had the Bruno Mars effect in its day, I would probably just despise it. But I love this song. Anyway, guys, here we are talking Preacher, not Come On Eileen, though it's part of the episode. We're back for season two. It's AfterBuzz TV. We're here. Episode one, On the Road, just aired. I freaking loved it. I was so excited about this episode. And before we break everything down for you guys, let's introduce the panel. We have a brand new panelist on the far side of the table.
Ooh.
Nate Miller, welcome to the show.
What's going on, guys? Happy to be here. Longtime fan of the comic book, big fan of the first season, and I'm excited to be here with you guys and break down the rest of the season.
You've got a sweet Jim Lee X-Men shirt on. I think that's a good move on your part.
Thank you. I wanted to. I don't have a Preacher shirt yet,
right?
Unfortunately, right. So I still wanted to show my comic book, background in some way.
Well, Preacher's a really interesting one on that note because, the comics stopped being released in 2000.
Right.
So, and a lot of people, myself included, read this for the first time as collected editions.
Exactly.
So the actual single issue covers and the issue numbers are not actually relevant to people in the same way that an X-Men comic has a specific iconic cover or issue number. Definitely. It's kind of just the whole. It's a 66. I think it's 66 issues.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what is remembered. So I don't think that a Preacher shirt is that appropriate.
Well, yeah. I mean, the cover art is not necessarily iconic because of when it became popular. It's much more in the trade paperbacks. I agree, but I know that they are there.
I do think that one cover from the Until the End of the World storyline.
Yeah, there's a couple one.
John Custer in the field. That's a very iconic cover.
There's also the cover of him over the.
Yes,
I've seen there's some good ones with Cassidy too.
Yeah,
some good Cassidy covers that I've seen.
One of the the Vietnam flashback ones where he's got the lighter from John Wayne. A couple of those covers are favorites of mine.
One would be.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've got Mr. Dave Child, one of my favorite names and people of all time.
What? Thank you. Yeah. Bad baby.
He's back on the panel.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I kind of have a little bit of Cassidy going on.
Totally.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. No sunlight and some kind of denim.
Am I the tulip here?
I guess.
I'm okay with it.
So
I'm very okay with it.
Just you'll have to siphon the gas through it.
Just make sure you choose TV Tulip. She's a much better character than the comic book character.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. They've improved her drastically.
Yes. I'm Dave Child. You can find me at mrdavechild or davechild.com. I'm happy to be here again.
Yeah. I'm happy you're here. We and I just finished 8 episodes of American Gods together. So it's another episode about religion and a road trip.
And Americana. Yeah. It's like religion and Americana. We're becoming experts at this.
Oh, yeah. We're just, like I said, two white guys on the internet trying to not get ourselves in trouble by talking about the subject.
Hey, whatever happens, happens. Preacher is definitely we're going to be talking about circumcision. We're going to be talking about God going to strip joints.
I think
it's the show that's just asking for trouble.
It's the best. Guys, I'm Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram, what have you. I'm here on AfterBuzz TV doing shows all the time. I want to talk about Preacher right now, though, because I have to say, as a longtime reader of this comic, and if you watched last season or you listened last season, you know this is my favorite comic book of all time. There's only a few that I can think of that are in the same level for me that I really have enjoyed, but the rereadability, the repeat value of this comic has actually just kept it there at the top for me. And this episode really feels like the Preacher I wanted to watch in season one.
Right.
Whereas season one touched on it at moments. It had episodes and it had certain arcs that really felt great. It also had these really, really long episodes that were this long prequel idea. And I know what they wanted to do for the television audience, and maybe that was necessary, but this just felt like reading a Preacher comic. And I was so much more satisfied. What about you guys?
Yeah, it kind of dived right into the action, which was kind of great. To start off with them, you already see them in road trip mode. And then they're talking about circumcisions. They're talking about where all these circumcised foreskins are going.
Face cream.
Coming up with different conspiracy theories. All that stuff was good. And then they actually hit the road, and the car chase happened, and you see kind of a grindhouse effect on the film all of a sudden, and it feels like Smokey and the Bandit, and it's yeah. just diving into the action right away. And then, of course, the Saint shows up,
yep.
and we can actually call him the Saint of Killers now, yeah. which is so good.
Yeah.
It feels so good because we couldn't do it last season,
yeah. yep.
and we had to call him the Cowboy and the Gunslinger, and now he's the Saint, and I'm so happy he's here. So it's great. It's off to a great start.
Was that just out of like not wanting to spoil for non-comic book readers?
Yeah, or? For the most part. So on that note, actually, we should point out really quickly to anybody watching or listening. So the way this works is that Preacher's been around forever, yet people are finding out about it now for the first time because of the show. And the promo on this season's been much higher than the first. So yeah. I think that there's going to be a lot of new watchers. We've all read the comic book several times. So what we're going to do, guys, is anything that we do know about comic book-wise, we will talk about vaguely, but we won't go directly into comic book references. And we will save that for the end. If there's a really relevant one to talk about, just make sure you stay till the end after the sign-off. We'll do a little two-minute, post-show spoiler discussion if we have to. But don't worry about it if you're watching. Nothing will be ruined for you comic book-wise.
Yeah.
We'll be very careful about that. We always will. So, but before we get into the full episode, I do want to remind everybody, please go and find AfterBuzz TV on Twitter, on iTunes. If you give us a rating and a review for The Preacher Show, it does help us stay high in the standings. AfterBuzz TV will always provide free content here, and we do that with ratings and reviews. It helps us, keep doing what we do and keep the lights on. So please right. do that for us. It would be awesome if you did. And, let's get back to the episode. So,
yeah. I also want to say this episode was a good... It was just good setting the scene again for this season because it kind of reminded you of everything that happened in the previous season and taking you through. It almost feels like you could join this season and not see last season and be okay.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it kind of helped explain everyone's character, who loves who, who's after who, what's coming after them, what powers they each have. Everything was kind of established again.
Well, I did think there's some part of them that realized that people are going to be getting into the show with this episode for the first time. And I think they understood that. So it's actually, looking back on season one, it was a weird decision to do it the way they did, yeah. if you think about it.
It seems really weird. Going back and I just rewatched the first season again recently just to kind of get a refresher.
Yeah.
And especially binging it
yeah.
like together, it feels really good as a rewatch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... Trying to look at it from the perspective of someone who hasn't read the comics, I think it actually was somewhat necessary to explain a lot of the concepts because okay. of the nature of the comic book, not to get too much into it, but it does a lot of flashbacks and a lot of explanations of past and stuff, which we may not get that same type of exposition on the show. They may want to just focus on what's happening.
Yep.
So this gives us a good foundation for the characters and stuff. But I agree with you. I also don't think it's completely necessary. You could definitely get into the show with this episode and be like, oh, okay, this guy's a vampire. This guy's a crazy preacher looking for God, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And they're all yeah. crazy and it's entertaining. And then at some point be like, I want to know more about what happened before and then go back and watch the first season.
They really checked a lot of boxes in this episode for me as far as like the things that I remembered laughing out loud and enjoying reading the comic book. Like there's a tone that is just great. And it's always the thing that I loved so much about Preacher.
Yeah.
It's like sort of juvenile humor in a lot of ways. It's got this like sort of Kevin Smithy social satire, but then it's also got these like really heavy concepts that feel like taboo to like
yeah.
infringe on, but they're willing to do it in this show. And that's what always tied the comic together, was it was such an interesting take on that. And the first season was like some of that, but it was also a lot of these characters that ultimately aren't around anymore, and we didn't really need them as much.
Yeah, there was a clearing of the cast of characters all last season, and it made it so it's like, why did we spend so much time with those people? But it didn't make it so it's surprising to people who are new to the story and aren't just like comic book fans.
Yeah.
And also, what's interesting about this episode is the characters don't even know about the fate of Anvil.
Right.
Like they're, every time they even turn on the TV or they're about to hear about this town that was just destroyed,
yeah.
they haven't even heard about it yet. So I'm actually curious to see if they ever find out about it. And I think they will, because I think it'll be play into Custer. But like right now, they don't know about it. They're
right.
just leaving town and they're on the road trip.
For sure.
And that's all that they know.
So let's jump actually straight into what happens. So the episode opens up. We have this road trip. You said he gets into this sort of grindhouse film style. And all of a sudden, you know, Jesse's kind of exploring, this is what I can do with the word. And it's funny. And he's doing all these things. And the guy's tasing his nuts. And, and you know, Cassidy is hiding in the truck.
He's macing his nuts.
Macing
to
his
be
nuts.
Completely accurate.
Yeah.
He's macing his nuts.
Remarkably painful, I'm sure. Something I hope I never experience. And then the Saint shows up. And this was great. I thought the way they handled, you know, because the way his guns are described in the book, like the power
the
of
sound,
those.
Sound? Yeah.
Yeah, they say Colt on them, the sound of them. They, you know, they blow things up. They blow holes in things. And I love that they didn't stray away from any of the gore, like the really gory, just like heads getting taken off.
Oh, God.
This was funny, too, because Sheriff Root in season one was a character they decided to go with and show him and Eugene in the whole season one, as opposed to like here, which is basically where he would have shown up had they stuck with the book.
That's what the scene would be.
This scene was almost that scene. And it was funny they chose to do it the way they did.
I thought for a second they might go the same similar route and have that one cop that looked like he could be a Root.
Cop.
To like stay alive and just give him a different name and still have him fill somewhat of a similar role. But then again, with the Archface stuff all happening already.
Yeah.
I don't know where they would go with that.
And I don't think we've heard the name Arseface yet, have we? Or no, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
Yeah,
Cassidy said it. His face looks like an arse.
They call him that.
Yeah.
In season one.
They call him Arseface. And also, we should just recap. He didn't play any role in this episode. But remember that he is someone who was sent to hell by Jesse last season.
Yep.
So currently, as far as we know, he's in hell. But he does appear to Jesse every now and then. But kind of in his own head. That didn't happen this episode
his
at
name
all?
Also, his name was, I think, in the credits for this episode.
Yeah.
Pretty certain. Coletti, Ian Coletti. I think I saw his name. So I think he's still billed. We can expect him to return. Also, in the post-credits we saw.
I saw a scene from next week. Yeah.
He's certainly coming back.
He's definitely coming back.
I mean, even with what the changes that they have made and wiping the slate of season one.
Yeah, he wasn't.
There's no way you can be a Preacher fan and make this show and just get rid of him like that. There's no way that can happen.
The nod to the intestine siphon was just like such a... Yes, that's what this show is. And that's all. And that's exactly the kind of nonsense that Garth Ennis would have written. And just the fact that Tulip has to do it, and that you don't even see it. It just cuts down the car, and she's got blood all over her face.
And it's just trailing.
And he's sitting in the back.
Yeah. I also love that as soon as they pull up to the gas guy, he was just like, what's happening? Who are you? Is that intestine? It's just, it kind of, you see it all dawn on him, and then the way he just makes him forget. I also love how in this episode, there was still a lot of talk about when they should use the God voice, when they should use Genesis, which is the name of the creature that embodied Jesse and kind of gave him the ability to have this God voice.
Right.
So when they should use it, when they shouldn't. And I love how it's Tulip that's really being like, this is when you do it, this is when you don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of... It's just a good way of setting up what... the moral crisis that Jesse Custer is in when he's given more power than a man should have.
Well, right, and he's still throwing it around pretty frivolously at this point. You know, telling guys to move. It's he's getting there, but he's not aware yet of how important this actually is and how careful he's got to be with it.
Yeah, and so far he hasn't gotten anyone into trouble like he did in last season, where he told people to do stuff and then they ended up doing it until they didn't stop.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind.
So, yeah, they end up in the car. They go to this gas station. You know, Jesse tells him to forget about him. He's just kind of throwing it around in this way that's like, he doesn't, you know, he's not really controlling it. I do love the interaction between Cassidy and Tulip. And he's like, it's hot sauce and Yoo-hoo. That's how you get rid of the taste of blood.
Yeah, which I think
if anybody would know, he would know.
Yeah, right? I like how that's from his own experience. Like, trust me.
No.
Yeah, yeah. This is the way to do it.
I've been here before.
Yeah, he must have, like, I don't think he likes...
I wonder
likes...
if all blood tastes the same.
Well, it has that copper taste to it, right? I mean, who would know?
Just two white guys trying not to get in trouble.
But also, keep in mind...
It's okay, I'm here to cover the ethnic card for you guys.
It also isn't blood. It's she had to use an intestine
to
siphon blood. Yeah. You're not tasting blood.
Yeah,
you're tasting everything that was in that intestine.
Yeah.
Whew, whew.
All right.
So, hot sauce and Yoo-hoo. If there's any bad taste in your mouth, hot sauce on you.
That's the way to do it. So Jesse picks something up. He grabs something. It looks like it's some sort of ornament off a car, and it kind of burns his fingers. What was that that he was holding?
That was a bullet.
That was the bullet from the Saint's gun.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I think it's kind of enforcing the idea that the bullet and the guns themselves are also supernatural and unstoppable and will hurt you even if you pick up a bullet that gets lodged in a car.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's interesting that it got lodged in a car because they're kind of almost unstoppable. But I guess you can't make them totally unstoppable because then it's just going to go through the earth.
They'll just go forever.
Yeah. So they're just super powerful is what we see.
So
and also keep in mind that the Saint walks. So even though he's an unstoppable force, he's a very slow unstoppable force.
I mean, he walks, but he doesn't walk like the rest of us. Because we saw him be like walking and then
just be there.
Be right behind that guy way faster than we saw him walking.
The man whose tongue he tears out.
Deceptive.
And that's one thing that, totally. And that was a gruesome, gruesome moment. Ugh. Like, I mean, cringe. But that is one thing that was really important is to remember is that the Saint is not good. He is there to kill Jesse. He's not one of these guys who's going to kill you if you get in his way, necessarily. He's just evil. He's going to kill you. He's going to tear your tongue out if you're just a mild-mannered guy running a gas station because you're there. And that's like one of the characteristics of that character that's very important, I think, is to keep him. You have to kind of hate that character. You have to understand why he's so angry, which I think we got a lot of the backstory in this last episode.
Last season,
I mean. But yeah, that continues, and his journey in this story is such an important one that you have to remember why he is so hateful and has no sympathy or patience for basically anybody.
Yeah, he's an unstoppable force.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would agree that he would just kill anyone willy-nilly. I definitely think he's evil. But I think him pulling that guy's tongue out was more about him feeling like he was lying to him or knowing that he knows something that, you know, maybe he doesn't know that Jesse commanded him not to say something why he can't say something, but he knows that he knows.
I almost felt that was him looking at the mark of, and this is not something from the comics, but I almost felt like it was him recognizing that his tongue was stopped.
By Genesis or something.
So
that's what I thought too.
He almost took it out and looked at it.
Yeah. That's what I got from that.
Interesting. Right, so he can almost like smell Genesis. He can almost like sense him and looking at it as he keeps going. And the fact that the next guy wasn't affected by Genesis, I think, might have been an important thing.
Sure. So they're on their way to go see Mike. Any thoughts here in the chat before we move on to this next setting?
Yeah, there's some people that there was a lot of mourning the cat.
We didn't even talk about the cat.
Yeah, and I think that it's funny with Cassidy, especially that he's. If we look at this season as kind of a reboot or kind of a new start into the story, one of the things that is famous that happens in stories is something called Save the Cat,
right?
Where they save a cat to show that a character is good-hearted. So I kind of love that one of the ways we're kind of reintroduced to Cassidy is he. Does the opposite of saving a cat and kills a cat.
The act of saving a cat is referenced in screenwriting as the thing you're supposed to do to establish your character's narrative, their will, their good, whatever. You're supposed to like them basically because they save a cat or they do something to show their worth. Him eating a cat is fantastic. It's showing the audience the kind of character Cassidy is.
And keep in mind, this is how he heals. So every time he drinks blood, because he's a vampire, this is how he heals. I never get the sense he likes the taste of the blood. It's just something that he has to do in order to kind of survive and heal his wounds.
He's pretty much willing to do like anything to survive. And I do wonder
we got Ivan Soto in the chat asking if Cassidy is Alf. And that's a deep cut because Alf used to eat cats, but people don't remember Alf. Okay, moving on.
Remember Alf.
Great obscure reference.
Yeah, good obscure reference.
Bonus points.
Strong reference. On that note, yesterday when I was at VidCon, I was interviewing people for Anchor, and I was interviewing Dotan the Piano Man. He takes a piano around the world and plays in all different countries.
Right.
And I was like, so you're like a traveling, you know, like a nomad. He's like, yeah. I was like, it's kind of like I made some reference to Young Guns 2 in the Blaze of Glory music video with like John Bon Jovi walking towards a cliff, and he's like, wow, you went there. He's like, that's a deep cut.
Deep cut.
Yeah.
So. Deep cut.
Anyway, back to the show. So, so we have he eats a cat. They're on the road to go see Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And they get there, and we find... So this... I felt like at first this character was Sai. Do you remember him from the first season?
I think we're kind of meant to. I mean... Oh, okay. aside from the first continue.
So it's a comic book reference that we haven't seen, and I don't want to go too far into it. But
yeah,
this
let's not talk about it.
Yeah, there's a character that shows up named Psy, and he's a little weird, and he's an old friend of one of theirs in the book.
Right.
So I thought maybe that's where they were going with this, and you see the girl chain like in the cage, and you think that maybe
that's just a great intro. Let's not talk too much about the book until later. But I think that's a great intro of a character. Because the first thing we see is this girl in a cage who is begging for a phone. And then you also have, like, Custer come in and just be like, not all business.
Yeah.
It's not all business.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to really think this person is terrible at first.
So, like, probably my favorite quote of the entire show is Cassie's like, why not chain her to a wall? And he's like, covered cage works best is why. Yeah. Anybody else want to tell me?
And the way he says it so definitively of like, yeah, I tried that. I've tried this. Yeah. You know, this is how it works best. I'm a professional at this. Yeah.
I just want to post something on Instagram.
Yeah. And the way that he's like.
That was the best part was the way they did that reveal of like. Because you see her asking for the phone, and, like, there's no way that I would be like, oh, he's helping her get over her addiction to her social media. Like, I would never put that together. But then when he's like, you know, some people have drinking problems, issues with their, you know, addiction to cell phone, whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's so creative to, like, show it in that way.
And then we later meet a character who was actually affected and... She says that her life was saved.
Yeah.
Tammy later says that her life was saved by that cage. So he really was helping people.
He knows what he's doing. Cage is the best way.
Even though now she runs a strip joint. So like,
well, no,
but it's a successful strip joint.
Yeah,
instead of her being an alcoholic.
Yeah, know? And don't judge people that run strip clubs.
Hey, no judgment.
It's a business.
Man.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a business. And also,
somebody's got to pay for college.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that he said, "Do you want me to call your parents?" And of course you would want that.
if you're being held captive.
Yeah, it was good.
That was another weird writing.
Like, what?
He's like, "No, I'm good. I'll stay in the cage."
So I know that Seth and Evan collectively directed these first two episodes of this season, and I know that's different than the first season. So I'm glad to see that because I do think that they understand the essence of this story better than some. I think they directed some episodes in the first season, but I know I'm glad they came back for these first two.
Yeah, and this was also a great episode because Mike seems like a character from the books, even though he's not from the books.
Yeah, totally.
He was invented for the show, but he still feels like he's of the same kind of sense of humor and also kind of sense of righteousness and good that also belongs in the books and in the show. And that was really nice. And you also, during this scene, we also get when they're talking to Mike and they're going through old pictures and old things, we also get a sense of John Custer
and
Christina, like, I always
Langell.
Langell. And they kind of mention Langell's family, and I think that's going to be important. So if you want to hear more about that, that is a reference to something in the books. We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that at the end of the episode. The stuff – and I love the conversation point about your father would be, you know, if you heard you talking that way. There's a – I've always said this for the longest time that, like, father-son stuff really chokes me up. It tends to in media. Anything I watch, like, that's usually the moment that gets me, which is probably why Preacher as a comic always resonated with me so much because his sense of his relationship to his dad and the importance of that was always so important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I think that there's an American – it's a very American old, like, Texas sort of – that thing about the relationship between father and son – that it's funny that Garth Ennis is not American, that he tapped into. He writes American ideals so well, this classic sense of like Americana. He really gets it. And last season at the premiere, I interviewed him, but then I ended up talking to him for like about an hour at the party afterwards. He was the longest conversation I had, and I talked to him a lot about that. And just like, because I've read war stories and a lot of his old comics, and I was like, explain to me why you're able to write American so well. Like, I feel like I connect to your characters better than most American writers. And he just was like, yeah, it's the way the media came up and the way I experienced media growing up was, you know,
from the American perspective.
And that's all the stuff with John Wayne and all that. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so much of our culture, especially in the beginning of entertainment when it was really starting to spread, we were just at the forefront of so much of it that so many of our films and stuff are classics and are like must-watch things for people.
Yeah.
So it might be more difficult now to relate to current American culture, but it definitely in terms of like classic Americana, like it's preserved.
Yeah. yeah.
so perfectly that someone could easily study it, I think. And then, I mean, obviously we've seen the results. I agree with you 100%. It's crazy to think that he's not American and still comes up with these stories and themes and, like, characters that feel very genuine.
Yep.
Well, the same thing happens also in American Gods, and we'd never really talk about this on the panel, but Neil Gaiman is British himself, so... And it's, I think both of these have to have an outsider's perspective to look at the idealism of America and also how America tends to contradict itself at every turn.
Right.
And it helps to have an outside perspective to kind of notice that and really point a light at those contradictions, but also the good idealism and the good, like, morality that tends to try and pop up every now and then,
yeah.
But then also gets hurt by the same sort of controversy and jealousy and selfishness that's also sometimes in American culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
but yeah. So the conversation that they have does hint at his relationship with his father, which is very important to the story and informs a lot of who Jesse is. And so it's nice to see them begin to talk about the Lungell family and Jesse. And so they end up getting out of there, and you know, Mike ends up meeting the saint and taking himself out. The actor that plays Mike, I wish I had his name written down in front of me. He's Landry's dad from Friday Night Lights. He shows up as
he's in a lot of things.
He shows up as either the like the military commander or the cop in like everything. He's like in Transformers 1. He's in like Supergirl.
His stoic like expression and delivery is always like.
He's always like a general or a dad.
He always comes off so distinguished.
Yeah, he's like pretty uptight usually.
Yeah.
I love that guy. He's like great in everything. And he's fantastic as Landry's dad. He's one of my favorites.
He's also good Americana. Yeah. He has that feeling of America. He's in Bloodline too. And he just like has this...
That's where I know him
from. Yeah, yeah. He has this feeling of just like a real like blue-blooded like American guy.
Yeah.
You know, it has that feeling to him. So he's perfect for Preacher.
Oh, he's in one of the X-Men movies, isn't he? Is he in X-Men First Class?
Yeah,
he's in
one of them. One of the generals. I don't remember which one.
Yeah.
All those movies blend
It's
together.
First Class on the boat with White Queen and Kevin Bacon.
I'm going to say yes.
Let's look through his IMDb.
Yeah. Anyway, he's great, and that conversation's great. So he ends up having a run-in with the saint and stabs himself to not talk.
Yeah.
And that's... pretty savage.
I
mean, seppuku and
I expected him to cut his throat.
Well, yeah, like seppuku is one thing when you see like in The Last Samurai or like any classic Japanese or samurai culture when they stab themselves and they get a head cut off. That's like a very like, all right, I'm gonna go here, but like the sitting left-sided cross the body into the chest move with like a knife that's gotta be, I mean, what if you hit the, like, he could have just suffered. And then what happened to the girl in the cage?
Yeah, I feel bad about her. I feel like
I didn't even think about
it. I feel like he was kind of prepared enough for this that I hope he let her out. But also...
Smashed her phone.
Yeah, I also like how he recognized the Saint of All Killers.
That's what I thought was interesting.
It's the Saint of Killers. I was the one who said Saint of All Killers all last season.
I also did it all the time because for some reason it feels more natural. But the Saint of Killers... this is the first time I think he gets the name the Saint of Killers.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure all last season we had to keep calling him. We got yelled at for keep calling him the Saint, and I'm glad we can finally call him the Saint.
Yeah, I agree.
But he recognizes him because he's kind of more familiar with the lore. He's a scholar, and maybe there's some reference to him and how he's brought out. Which is nice because last season it kind of seemed like they just found a dude in hell and brought him out.
Right.
And this way... This time, now they seem to be setting up that he has this kind of role as the saint. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so when he kills himself, it's really because he knows what the saint can do, and he also just doesn't want to be forced to talk. And it's mirroring the when the saint kills the other guy and takes out his tongue. This guy, he's not able to get anything out of him.
That's commitment too.
Yeah,
commitment to the cause.
Basically pointless because Saint finds him anyways.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe he bought him some time.
Yeah,
maybe, but I also because I get the sense that the Saint can just sense where he is and he's on a mission, so he can just. He's also following just a straight road. It seems.
So. I know you had your hopes up. That's why there's whiskey. Solid line, solid quotes from that guy. So I also think it's interesting that you know there's a default phrase in our culture referring to God as a he. It happens more often than not. The default is never she, and God being referenced as God as not having a gender is something that, you know, people more respectful do. But I think culturally the default has always been to use the phrase he. And I think it's interesting that this show has chosen absolutely God is a he. He's at a strip club with female dancers. And,
well, but he wasn't there for that.
Yeah, but I just mean everything about it is they called him he a bunch of times this episode. And that they find him in a strip club with female dancers.
Yeah, but
is,
I mean,
like,
remember, these are preachers, so
yeah, they're playing.
They read from the Bible when they preach their sermons. That's what they use. Yeah, they're not gonna refer to God in any other way. What they know. That's how they're raised. That's how they speak every day.
They're not gonna call like God Gaia or anything like that. It's sure. just kind of like or a mother figure. They're Texas preachers. So that to him, to those preachers, he's a he.
I guess what I mean is this is now 11 episodes into the show, and Tulip hasn't corrected anybody one time. Nobody's said anything to the effect of, like, why do you keep calling God a he? And that's like...
I think we might...
Maybe we'll get there, you know?
That might end up happening,
yeah,
for all we know.
I could definitely see that happening.
Also, Nick B. in the conversation asked, what was the cryptic conversation about the map about? I think in the conversation that they had with Mike, I think he was just saying there is no defined map. There's no like sense of this is where God is, and
Mesopotamia.
Definitely. So out of Mesopotamia. So there, I think that's what the conversation was about. So
yeah,
okay.
So they get to this strip joint, this jazz strip joint, and I liked a lot about this. I loved a lot about this. One of my favorites is in the office when Tulip says, "Why do guys come to strip joints?" It's like, the first time it's always from the girls. Second time it's about one girl. Like, right. It's great.
And that scene was awesome just because of what was happening with Cass in the monitor.
It was so good.
It reminded me of like that Community episode where there's the one guy who's always in the background and
when the pregnant girl.
Yeah.
You see the whole relationship and then you see the girl get pregnant and then she has the kid. Like throughout the season you see like the stages of the relationship.
Yeah, it just always happens
so
in the background.
Masterfully done.
Yeah, and this was great because it was just like one little fight and you saw that it was escalating and it became important later when there was a gunshot and it went through and it got tangled.
Right, what at first just seemed like a funny gimmick because like, oh, of course it's Cassidy's the one that's touching the girls.
Yeah.
Right.
Then by the end of the scene it becomes very important and like both of it's almost like it's a whole nother scene just going on in a different room that we only see through the cameras.
Right.
That obviously becomes very important because she gets shot.
Yeah, and so Tammy talks a little bit about God, and at first she's unwilling, and then she hears Mike's name, so she reveals, you know, her history there. And then she eventually starts talking about God coming in and, you know, actually coming into the strip joint and what that was actually like and what he was doing there. And eventually we find out that he was there for the jazz.
And we find out God is Ryan Gosling from La La Land.
Yeah.
He's just looking for the jazz. Looking for the jazz, man.
I also think it's worth mentioning, too, how she doesn't want to tell him and, you know, Jesse just wants to go straight for using Genesis.
Right.
And we get to see that conflict with Tulip of her like, all right, well, I mean, can we at least use it as like a last resort? Like,
yeah,
at least try some of the things. And also the great interaction you get of Tammy watching them talk about this thing she has no idea about that they're going to use on her, which then, of course, she flips out and gets her letter opener.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, they've been pretty open and willing to use the phrase Genesis in front of people. So, like, even those cops, though none of them survived, but referring to Genesis and this power, even if they're, you know, not able to move because they're under the word, that information, that name spreading with the agencies that are around, you know, listening to this and paying attention.
Interesting.
Is like, I think that's relevant information. So
yeah, and they're not just saying God voice. Like, they could just say God
voice. They're using the phrase
Genesis,
which is important. So, but yes, there's this whole conversation about the jazz, the girl, why, and what's going on. They were building it up for a second there. I don't know if either one of you guys felt like this, but I felt like for a minute the voice wasn't going to work on Tammy. There was this part of me that thought maybe he was going to say it and that she was going to be somehow immune to it.
I didn't think so. I just felt like they're really trying to figure out where to draw the line with when to use the voice and not. And my guess, this is a bit predictions, but my guess is when he finds out what happened to Anvil, he's going to be a lot more hesitant to use the voice.
The other thing, too, actually, on the subject quickly before we get back into that, was with the idea of who we think people were. There was a minute when Mike was in the chair before they revealed that it was the Saint that I thought maybe it was a different character. They took a while to give us that reveal. Did you? Was there any part of you guys that thought that
someone was coming after Mike?
Maybe that it was a different character who was looking for Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there is. Maybe we could talk in the predictions about. Maybe
they took their time.
I could have
on
seen that
that
happening.
They took it right.
But as soon as you heard the Spurs, and I was watching with closed captions, and it says Spurs.
Yeah,
you hear Spurs.
Well, yeah. I heard the Spurs, and but like the fact they took so long to reveal him, I thought it was a tease, and I definitely we should talk about it in the episode. So
yeah.
You were gonna say something. Or no?
What were we talking? What were we talking about before that?
We're talking about Tammy and how she says that the God was there for the Jazz. God's a Jazz man.
God's a Jazz man.
We also have. I like also throughout the building of this episode, we have the sexual tension between
Casting Tool.
All three of them really, because you have. It's this is why it was a good episode to just remind you where everyone's at, because you have Cassidy who slept with Tulip but is keeping it secret. From Jesse.
Yep.
And yet Jesse and Tulip are kind of waiting for a time to be alone.
Yeah.
And there was they were three people in a bed.
Right.
At Mike's. And now the episode ends where they go to the hotel.
Right.
And you have that moment where
Cassidy's trying to like keep him outside for a second. Let's keep talking.
Let's keep talking. And they go in and their foreplay was really on the nose, like Jesse and Tulip.
Yeah, it's great.
And a great way of just like having to punch through the door.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Was like weird ass foreplay.
I just feel like his form was not great for breaking the door.
Oh, what
like,
do you do when you break
kick
through
the
a door?
You kick the door on the handle and it just opens. You don't have to break a hole.
But I think
have
it's
you
about.
Kicked the door open
I think it was. I think it was more about the.
We don't have to talk about that.
I plead the fifth. I think it was more about. The foreplay.
Yeah, I think
and
it was like
the fun of breaking something and look how strong I am.
Punching through a door is their thing, not kicking through a door.
I have never
kicked
a door open.
It's more about brawn than brains.
And I have to say, the idea of I would be so terrified to kick a door open because I'm just positive I'd like break my ankle. I'm just like sure of it. Like the
you
idea.
Just gotta, you just have to have the right form.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And another
you get the hang of it.
Yeah.
And then also what happens in the hotel is there's a commercial on.
Yeah.
For what was his
Ganesh.
Name?
Ganesh.
The Amazing Ganesh?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we pretty much know who the Amazing Ganesh is.
Yeah.
But we see, but I kind of forget his name. I forgot to look it up
before.
It's
Fior.
It's Fior.
Yeah.
Because you see, I think you see like a sense of, you see the side of his face.
It's definitely
and you don't see him.
Yeah.
But then later when Cass is watching it, he goes like, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, what's that guy?
He was of all of the people at that premiere, he was my single favorite to talk to. He was the nicest guy on earth. That
really?
Guy. Yeah, that actor. I can't think what his name is, but he was fantastic.
Does he talk like that, or is that like a put on?
He's got a voice like this.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good kind of sounds.
That's
like.
Him then. Yeah, that's him. That's awesome. So we get a sense of. Oh, and then, of course, we have the very final. What happens is the Saint appears to Jesse. And Jesse tries to use the voice, and it doesn't work.
Yes.
Which is interesting, right?
Yes. And in fact, that probably should lead us into sign-off predictions and then spoiler talk. Because there's actually more to talk about spoiler talk this episode.
There's a lot.
That I would have expected.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that it doesn't work on him is very surprising. Is there anything else we're missing or forgetting?
I think that's mostly it. I'm going to check the chat, but I think that...
I just want to say I think it's really cool to see, like you said, the love triangle kind of stuff. Yeah. And then also
Early on, too.
Yeah, and we get that conversation that you get always in the car between the two of them when he's like, you know, we should just tell him. She's like, no, he's going to be mad. And you get that, you know, that classic sitcom situation of her like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, he'll be mad, but tell him now because whenever he finds out, it's going to be worse and you're going to wish that you had told him before. So it's cool to see that now because we know that that's foreshadowing. You know, it may not happen even this season. It may happen in another season, but they're definitely building towards, you know, Jesse and Cassidy to have some differences over their feelings.
Right,
Tulip.
Right.
Yeah, there was definitely a change in the plotting there that this happened in the first season.
Yeah,
and
I think is an improvement.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's get into the spoilers where we talk about our predictions and then we also talk about... What happens in the books?
Yeah, I think let's do a quick soft predictions regular with sign-offs, and then we'll close it out with a spoiler discussion.
Okay.
And now your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So I think from what I saw next week on, they're gonna follow the Jazz, and I think they might be going to New Orleans, but there's also they might be going to see the amazing Ganesh, which I think he'll play a role. Coming up.
Yes. He's great comic relief that really, and they did this in the first season a lot, he's great comic relief who is a great way for them to get some of the exposition necessary to figure out what's going on. And they did a great job in the comic with that, too. It's a little bit of a different approach in the show, but I'm glad to see he's going to be back, and I do think that they will seek him out because of the two shots in this episode where we saw him on television and Cassidy's realization of who he was.
Okay. Cool.
This is tough. Not...
Yeah,
treading into comic territory, but just based off the show,
I'm ready to dive into comic territory as soon as possible.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know predictions are so hard on comic book shows.
We should also note before we go into talking about the books, in case you don't want to watch, tomorrow is another episode of this show. We're not going to be here tomorrow, unfortunately, because of scheduling conflicts, but we will be here next week.
Yep, on Monday the 3rd, day before the holiday. It's going to be a panel. I actually won't be here. I'll be out of town, but there will be a panel here recapping both episodes 2 and 3 together next week.
Yes, so we'll be there recapping as much as we can. Thank you for your patience, which it's kind of an odd scheduling, and we're kind of worried about it because of this, because they're not being very vocal with how this whole season scheduled out. So please tell your friends to watch the show and keep them watching, because
premiered it on a Sunday, but they're following it up with the second episode on Monday. From a scheduling perspective here, we were thrown off because we all plan on doing the show on Sundays until like a week and a half ago.
It's really strange.
Yeah. So anyway, that though will wrap up our basic predictions, and we will have a conversation here after our sign off about spoilers. So stick around for that if you want. If you guys want to find me anywhere, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter or Instagram, and on Wednesdays on the Popcorn Talk Network doing Action Movie Anatomy, where we break down action movies, the best ones ever, 1 hour at a time, one movie a week. And that's my story.
And you can find me at MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com, which will list all the other shows I've done and do for AfterBuzz. I'm Dave Child.
And guys, this is Nate Miller. You can find me on all social media at DogLikeNate. That's dog with two G's. And I'm doing the Silicon Valley After Show tomorrow. We're doing the season finale. And I'll be in a few other shows here at AfterBuzz.
Nice.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, guys. We're going to get into spoiler predictions right now.
Spoiler alert.
If you want nothing to do with it, get out of here. This is your warning. You have 10 seconds to go, go, go.
Okay, so my favorite... 10. Okay, my favorite my favorite little nod that is in this entire episode is the bubbling
fish
chest.
Tank?
Yes! Is the fish tank.
Oh, did you not see that?
Okay, man! I love it because it means that they're going down the right direction.
Yes!
Because they said, as soon as he brings up his family and he says, what happened with the rest of the family, the L'Angelo's, it is a rack focus to the chest behind him in the fish tank, which is opening up and bubbles are coming up, which is in reference to when in the comic book, when he's in the coffin at the bottom of the swamp, and he can only breathe through a tube, which is a very important moment for Jesse, and it's
huge.
Great that they're building that up and they're kind of referencing something for the comic book fans.
Well, so a specific question, I mentioned that conversation with Garth Ennis, and the specific question that I asked him, and that's actually in an interview you can find on Popcorn Talk, I think, where I asked him specifically about John Wayne. And I said, is John Wayne going to play a role in the story, because it's such an important part of the comic? And he said, for the purpose of the era involved and also probably some sort of trademarks, we're probably not going to be able to do that. So they're going to have to go in a different direction. And what they do with that, I'm not sure, but I definitely do think that we're going to get the Until the End of the World storyline, and I think it's going to happen this season.
Yes, I think so too.
I think probably it'll be the second half of this season, and the big conclusion will be the cliffhanger that happens with Tulip getting her head blown off.
Right.
For, you know, we are in spoilers, so.
And that may happen or may not, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Another big surprise in this episode for comic book fans is the voice doesn't work. On the Saint.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Am I wrong with saying that in the comic book, the voice works on the Saint?
Well, it works. Not only does it work, but one of the biggest moments is when he confronts him later and the Saint's looking at him and he's like, if you ever use that voice on me again, I'm going to basically jam these guns so far up your ass, kind of a thing. Like, he is furious that Jesse uses the voice on him. And it does work. Which is why I was so surprised, and I thought it wasn't going to work on Tammy, because I thought it was going to be one of those things, like when Grandma is immune to the voice. I thought it was going to be one of those weird things, and I haven't done that yet, so.
Right, right. And I'm curious to see, maybe it's something where if he puts more confidence behind the voice, it becomes more powerful.
Something like that. Mm.
So, like, he has to gain his confidence, and it'll be a nice reveal later on when the voice does work.
Is there any precedence for that in the comics?
I don't know. Well, by the time he uses the voice, it feels like he's grown.
Yeah.
He's become a different person. So I feel like
as opposed to now.
Yeah, and this is a way to keep it so the saint can still be coming after them and they don't have a quick... Because when you have this all-powerful weapon, you don't want to use it too much.
But I'm still curious of how do they...
Yeah,
I'm. You know, obviously we'll see, but I'm on edge of what is the foil? What keeps the saint from just blowing his brains up?
Well, why hasn't he just shot him already?
Yeah, from as far away that he is.
I also think it's a it's an It Follows situation where they can outrun him, but he'll keep coming after.
Right, they can't stop him.
Yeah, it's like they'll keep going and he'll keep walking.
Maybe he's got earplugs.
That could be it too. It could be as simple as he has earplugs.
That's what I was going to ask you before we came in, because I rewatched the season, but I'm pretty sure when the angels go to get him, all they say is we need you to kill a preacher. I don't see them mention anything about Genesis. So does he know anything about Genesis? Is he prepared, and that's why he can't hear him or whatever? Yeah. Or does he have no idea?
I'm sure, we'll find out.
I think that's interesting too.
I thought the character, by the way, to make reference to it, that we might have been meeting was Jody. I thought maybe the guy walking in was Jody, and he was looking for Jesse. And I do think that that's a deliberate nod by Seth and Evan, because I think that they know that's the fan favorite storyline. It tends to be most people's favorite, and I think that they're teasing that, and they're teasing for the comic book fans. I think they're teasing that that's going to happen.
So you thought that was a tease?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they took so long. You heard the Spurs, but if you hear the Spurs and you know that it's the Saint, they should have just shown something to make it the Saint instead of like a conversation focused entirely on Landry's dad, where he was sitting there going back and forth before you actually saw it.
Yeah, so, I could see that. I think I would definitely be excited to see him.
Yeah, when Jody shows up, that's going
to
be huge.
Yeah. And I think they're going to – maybe they're going to go after Fior to ask who the saint is and why the saint's after them.
Well, and then
this
we
is
also,
a good source of information.
And we saw the teases with Hair Star, which I'm so
he
excited.
So good.
Star. I'm so excited to have Hair Star.
Really excited
I'm curious
to
about
Grail.
When he's come in. And also in the teaser, I think we see R Space in hell talking to, like, Hitler.
Yeah,
I think it's like I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with what's happening in hell later.
Yeah, I think so too.
Which is all new, not in the comics at all. So I'm dying to see what happens.
There's no hell storyline. Yeah,
yeah, with R's face and his rise. I hope he still becomes a pop star, but we'll see.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that's gonna wrap it up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. It's AfterBuzz TV. Go and find us on the social and come back same time, same place. Except it's on Mondays instead of Sundays. I believe we're taping at 9 on Mondays.
Yes.
But if you follow us on Twitter at AfterBuzzTV and any one of the three of us, you will find out exactly the deal. So come back on Mondays to see it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And have an awesome Sunday night.
Thanks.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.